The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Thanks for downloading Talk is Jericho. Today I've got MVP, one of the newest additions to TNA Impact Wrestling, and what a huge, huge splash he's making. He's going to give us his theories and thoughts on why he came to TNA, and also the results of his MRI. Will he be able to wrestle this Sunday? Find out just coming up very, very quickly. But first, you guys know how much I love music. It's one of my biggest passions in my life. And that's why I've discovered and listened to Our Tunes. Our Tunes is a streaming music service that lets you listen to both your favorite mainstream artists as well as new indie artists, the newest bands keeping the scene alive. It's the perfect listening experience. You can easily discover new bands, listen to great music, and get better sound quality than Pandora. And in this day and age, that is such an important thing. Our Tunes handcrafts their musical selections so you don't have to worry about some algorithm choosing terrible music for you. And how cool is this? Artists and comedians can sign up for free today and start uploading their music and gain exposure next to mainstream artists. It's the best of both worlds, and I ain't talking about Van Halen. How's this for all you fans out there? You guys will receive 3 months of unlimited skips and no ads by signing up at OurTunes, spelled with a Z at the end, .com, and using the promo code Jericho50. That's OURTUNEZ, or Z if you're in Canada, .com. OURTUNEZ.com. Use the promo code Jericho50. That's Jericho50. Then simply download the iPhone or Android app for your device and receive another 3 months as a thank you. That's OurTunes with a Z.com. Check it out and do it right now.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This
is Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The spell you run now will be broken by Chris Jericho. The People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. My time has come. Oh, my time has come. Killing the people don't fear the reaper. Baby, don't you understand? People, don't you fear the creeper. Baby, won't you take my hand? La 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 la, la 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 la, woo! Yes, welcome to Talk is Jericho. How the hell are you, Jerichoholics? It's so cool to have you here. I know there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts that you can listen to, and you always schwoz to be here with me today, and I'm always glad when you schwoz to check out my show. Today, I got MVP coming up from TNA Impact Wrestling, and what a story life he's had, an amazing life, a crazy life, spent over 8 years in prison, in federal prison, before becoming a pro wrestler and spending more years in a different type of prison, if you know what I'm saying. MVP's been working in Japan for the last few years, a lot of amazing stories about living there and wrestling in that culture, and now he has returned to the United States, and he's wrestling in TNA Impact Wrestling. He's going for the championship this week. Also had a pretty bad knee injury. We're going to find out exactly what the status is of MVP's knee, the status of his appearance this Sunday on the pay-per-view. So wait and see what happens. MVP is going to be here. Lots of stuff to talk about, though. I want to clear up something that happened on the last week's show with AJ Styles. An amazing show. AJ very outspoken, outspoken towards TNA. Got a lot of grievances that he aired on our show. And also brought up the fact he's wrestling on the independent scene right now. And about how I guess he was over in England and gave his opponent the Styles Clash, which is quite a simple move aesthetically, to a guy called Lionheart, which, of course, was my old nickname. And suddenly a huge burst of controversy started out from a certain segment of people who were convinced that I, in my analysis of what AJ was telling me, was demeaning the UK independent wrestling scene in some sort of shape or form, and also demeaning Lionheart. Couldn't be further from the truth. Now, I never apologize for what I say, but I want to explain what I say. And after 24 years in wrestling, I think I have an opinion that's valid, an opinion that comes from not from being you know pretentious or kind of saying things off the cuff. These things are things that I'm saying from lots of experience, completely directly tied to me. Now, when AJ was talking about how Lionheart got hurt on the Styles Clash, I made a comment that when you go to certain leagues, when you're on the independent scene, that a lot of times guys will say they can do moves that they can't do. And I was never saying that Lionheart did not know what he was doing. I've actually read about him in FSM magazine, Fighting Spirit magazine, out of the UK. I've seen a couple clips of Lionheart on YouTube. His name is Lionheart, so how could I not like that? So I also the same thing with all of the people and the companies in the UK. In no way do I demean any independent companies or any independent wrestler, because I was one of them at some point in time. I traveled the world before I got into ECW. I spent a lot of time in Hamburg with guys that had spent lots of time on the UK independent quote-unquote wrestling scene. Robbie Brookside, Doc Dean, Johnny South, Johnny Saint, Boston Blackie. You know, a lot of guys like that from kind of the Drew McDonald. So when you say that I'm demeaning the UK wrestling scene, I'm really not, because I spent a lot of time with those guys. I did make a comment that if you go to work for World British Super Duper Championship Motocross Wrestling and maybe work with the champion, that maybe that champion isn't as good as he says he is. Now, I say that, use the... What did I say? World British Super Duper Championship Motocross Wrestling as an example to say there's a lot of promotions out there. I could have easily just have said Farm Fresh, Haystack, West Virginia Super Duper Championship Wrestling. Okay, would that have made all you people in the UK feel better? Then I would have hurt the feelings of the people in Beckley, West Virginia. What I was saying is that there's a lot of promotions around the world. Some of them are huge, like WWE. Some of them are not. Lot of performers and wrestlers in those companies. Some of them are great. Some of them are so-so. Some of them aren't very good. And that goes with the same thing I would say in WWE as well as World British Super Duper Championship Motocross Wrestling. My point is that a lot of guys sometimes will say that they're better than they really are. And you never really know until you get into the ring with them. I remember when I was training way back in 1990 that Lance and I were working in Hart Brothers Pro Wrestling training camp, and one of the guys who was kind of our trainer said, oh yes, we've got this guy coming in today, he's a promoter, he promotes outside of Calgary. And I was like, oh my gosh, like outside of Calgary, where? Like Vancouver or Toronto or Chicago or, you know, Mexico? Where do you promote? I promote in Innisfail. Innisfail is a little town about, I don't know, 30 miles outside of Calgary. So this was the guy who was promoting outside of Calgary, but they were making it sound like he was the bee's knees. The bee's knees? The bee's knees! He wasn't the bee's knees. I'm not even going to mention his name, but he was not very good. He was a judge. It was his wrestling gimmick. And he was the champion. And he was the champion because he owned the wrestling company, which I believe is called International Canadian Championship Wrestling or something, or maybe it was the CWWC or CCWC, something along those lines. It might as well have been called World British Super Duper Championship Motocross Wrestling. And when I saw the guy wrestle, I was like, this guy is awful. He's the drizzling shits. Like, this guy is not any good at all. But because he was the owner of the company and the guy who was paying the bills, he made himself the champion. And there you go. So if you were coming in as an AJ Styles to CWWC, Championship Canadian Wrestling Connection. Remember, it was a Canadian Wrestling Connection. Maybe it was the CWC. And you knew, oh, I'm working with the champion. He's the judge. And then you go in there and realize that the judge is actually, you know, the smudge. Because he ain't very good, then you got your work cut out for you. And that was my point that I was making to AJ. And some people were like, well, of course, Jericho was agreeing with his guest and didn't even know the situation. I have a guest on because I respect them. I respect AJ Styles inherently, incessantly, all the work that he's done. I've seen plenty of his matches that blew my mind. I think he's one of the best workers, actual pure wrestlers in the business today. So if he tells me about a tale that he had, then I'm going to agree with him or at least listen to him and be on his side because I have respect for AJ Styles. That doesn't mean I don't have respect for Lionheart or for wrestling in England or for wrestling in Beckley, West Virginia or anything. I'm just merely saying that in my travels and trails that I have come across guys who claim to have been better than they are. So that's kind of how that whole thing went down. Not demeaning the UK wrestling scene in any way, shape, or form. Some of my favorite performers of all time are English from the UK. And I have had some amazing matches against UK wrestlers and had some amazing matches in the UK. And also, too, the UK has by far some of the greatest wrestling fans in the entire world. So hopefully that clears things up, although some people will probably be mad about what I just said right now. And if that's the case, well, I got two words for you. Good old-fashioned Jericho Raspberry for you. You can't please all the people all the time. And whether you like what I said or don't like what I said, my point is I have nothing against the UK wrestling scene. No demeaning in any way, shape, or form. And Lionheart, like I said, nothing against him either. He works hard. He's working his way up the ranks the same way that I did, and that's all you can ever do. So much respect to anybody that's ever strapped on the boots. Some guys are better than others. It's not the fact that they're in the ring that bothers me sometimes. It's the bravado that certain guys use that claim they're better than they really are, which could end up being dangerous for the guy and for the guy wrestling him, if it's me or if it's AJ or if it's you or whoever. And there's not one wrestler in the history of the business who won't agree with me. So don't even try and debate me or argue with me, anybody who doesn't like what I'm saying. I will not be taking any questions about this on Twitter or ever again. Case closed. Case closed. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, break his neck. Neck. Woo! There you go. A little palate cleanser. Get on to some other things. And plus, why would I ever demean the English wrestling scene or anybody in the UK when I'm going to be going to the UK tomorrow to head over for a big week, a lot of shows, a lot of stuff going on, a real amalgamation of shows, which is the typical Jericho way of doing things, as you guys know. That's how I roll. June 12th and June 15th, it's London is Jericho, my one-man shows. Q&A shows. I'll be telling stories, doing some tap dancing, some pie plate spinning, imitations. I'm going to imitate Ricky Gervais. I'm going to imitate Austin Powers. I'm going to imitate, I heard about this guy, this Darcy Oaks, I think his name is, a guy from Winnipeg, a son of a famous sportscaster in Winnipeg, who's now a magician on England's Got Talent, which is funny because he's from Winnipeg. So I guess he maybe squeaked in under the radar as a Canadian. Maybe he's a Canadian Englishman. Hello, how are you, eh? Oh, I'm going to go to a party, eh? So good luck to Darcy and good luck to me. London is Jericho. If you want to check out these shows, tickets are close to selling out. There's still a few available, and that's not just some kind of wrestling talk. This is actually the truth. We're about 80% capacity right now. So if you want to go to the show, do not miss out. June 12th, June 15th, it's coming up very, very quickly. That's a Thursday and a Sunday, this Thursday and this Sunday, and you can get those tickets on... how can you get them? Well, I'm going to tell you, you can get them. You can get them at psievents.co.uk. That's www.psievents.co.uk. I believe that most of the VIP tickets are sold out, but you can still get some good seats to the show. And it's going to be a great conversation between me and all of you, me and all my UK Jerichoholics, talking about WWE, WCW, ECW, talking about Fozzy, talking about Download, talking about all the different things that I've done. And I'm looking forward to it. I always like hanging out with my buds over in the UK. So that is June 12th and 15th. Of course, June 14th, Fozzy, main stage of Download, the biggest festival of the summer. We are going on at noon, kind of early, but on the main stage, there will be 50, 60,000 people there. I'm so stoked and ready to just completely go nuts and rock it. And if you saw us in 2012, you know how much we bring it when we come to the UK or any show that we do. And we are going to continue that this year, main stage of Download. I've been so excited about it. I think a couple of years ago, I said if we ever make it to the main stage, I would drink a cup of pee, which a lot of people are calling me on. But I think I'm going to rephrase that. If we ever get to the main event of the main stage, so if we're on playing last or second last, I will drink a cup of pee on stage. So there you go. That'll be my production. Something to look forward to. There will be no pee drinking this time. Just a whole lot of rock and roll for you. And also we'll be at the Kerrang signing tent at 1:30 on Saturday. So come on down. That apparently is already completely going to be overpacked, oversold for that too. But come and hang out with us and come rock and roll as we always do. Of course, July 22nd, Do You Want to Start a War by Fozzy is going to be released. If you want to pre-order it, we would love if you would do that for us. You can go to iTunes or Amazon, pre-order Do You Want to Start a War, and you can hear One Crazed Anarchist before anybody else does. Before the record gets released, of course, Lights Go Out now, already burning its way up the charts. It's already in the 40s, higher than Sandpaper was after only 2 weeks of radio. So we're expecting it to go top 20, maybe even top 10. That's my prediction. So go check those out. And also join me at Tweet Secret. Go to Tweet Secret, the app on iTunes, and you can get exclusive videos sent directly to your device from me. I do about one a day, and it's content that you won't see anywhere else, and you're going to love it, just like you love Talk is Jericho, and just like I love the fact, how's that for a segue, that Cheapo Air is running a sweepstakes throughout the month of June. One lucky traveler will win 50 tickets. Yeah, I said 50. 50 tickets to travel the U.S. It's huge. All you got to do is download the Cheapo Air app and enter the absolute getaway for a chance to win. That's it. No purchase necessary. And although as long as you have the app, you might as well fly out to see Fozzy at Download. Or hey, book a trip to see London is Jericho on June 15th at Leicester Square Theater. It's going to be fruit, y'all. If you have time to get here, do it. Go to cheapoair.com and get those tickets that way. Even if you don't win, you can still save big during checkout with promo code Y2J. Visit cheapoair.com today and remember to use my promo code Y2J to save some serious cash. Cheapoair.com. Use the promo code Y2J. Go save some money now.
My name is Paul Shirley.
And I am Justin Halpern.
We do a podcast called Short Corner.
Paul is gone this week, so we had guest host Amir Blumenfeld from Jake and Amir and College Humor and their podcast, Rich.
If I Were You on podcast1.com.
So are you a big NBA fan?
Nope, never heard of it. Well, they just plopped me down on this chair and said, talk sports, so I don't know, we'll see what happens. No, I am a big fan.
It was magic. Do you think Paul should even come back, Rich?
Why bother?
No, we miss Paul.
We had him on the show, too.
Find us at podcast1.com and let us make love to your ears.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, on the line, my buddy, my pal, still not completely sure what MVP stands for. Montel Vesuvius Portnoy?
Close enough.
What was it that? What did it originally stand for?
Montel Vontavious Porter, right?
Nice. The Vontavious is what got me mixed up there, man.
Yeah.
Now it's good to talk to you, dude. It's been a little while. Unfortunately, you were supposed to come into the studio today, but you couldn't because you got injured in England. Is that what happened?
Yeah, Friday night. I went out to do PCW UK, Preston City Wrestling. Real good group. Awesome locker room. The promoter was good business. And at the end of the tag match, I was feeding for the comeback, and I just felt my knee pop. And couldn't put any more weight on it. And it was real cool because I crawled to the back, and Loki and Hurricane Helms were waiting for me at the curtain. And shoulders ready, because I couldn't put any weight on it. They literally had to carry me up the steps.
Wow.
And Hurricane said, yeah, you know, typical Hurricane fashion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, we knew you was hurt because you can't sell that good.
Well, and that's the worst feeling too. You always say that you know when you're really hurt when you don't even sell it. Like, you can't even pretend that you're hurt because you're really hurt. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
And exactly. It's always the way too. You know, you take a bump, you do a superplex, whatever it is, and it's sometimes just from running across the ring, right? That's all it takes.
Yeah, and that's what everybody was saying. We were sitting in the back laughing about it because, you know, as you very well know, you know, the serious injuries never come from anything dramatic, you know.
Yeah.
Fall backwards from a ladder through a table, and then you would think, oh my God, he broke his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And but he, you know, goes to do a leapfrog and blows his ACL, you know.
Now, did you have to go to the hospital in England?
Yeah, I went to the hospital the next day, got an x-ray done. That whole nationalized healthcare is a pretty cool concept. They gave me an x-ray, which was inconclusive, but I knew it would be because it was soft tissue damage. And they gave me some crutches and then gave me an anti-inflammatory and sent me on my way. So I went back to the show the next night, and I went out, got my crutches, and apologized to everybody and said, hey, it's not ballet. You know, last night I got hurt. I'm sorry, but I will be back. And, you know, when I get better, I'll leave you guys a match. And it was real cool.
Was there a difference between American hospitals and English hospitals? I don't know if I've ever been in an English one before. I know some European ones are a little bit sketchy.
Man, my experience was real good, and it was pretty much like anything I had been to in the U.S. Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't like some of the horror stories I've heard about hospitals in Japan. Nothing like that at all. The whole time I was actually really comfortable. It's cool.
Go ahead.
They gave the crutches that they gave me were like you know Jimmy from South Park. The rickets crutches or whatever.
Yeah, with the little hand, the little round circles in them kind of thing with the handle on the side.
Yeah, and I'm like, you guys don't have regular crutches? And no, we don't use those. And so I'm hobbling around on those things, and it's like doing a perpetual set of dips. And when I get to Holland, I said, well, let me see if I can find some over here. And the guy, when I asked him, he said, you mean like the kind they used to give to the soldiers back in the war? What are you talking about, man? He said, we haven't seen those here in Holland in 20 years. So whatever it is in Europe, they don't give old school what to me or normal crutches. They give the Jimmy crutches.
So you actually stayed on the tour and continued to another country, not just the next show in England, but you went to Holland after as well.
Yeah, I was booked for Dutch Pro Wrestling, and you know, at this point, you know how it is, man. You know how injured you are.
Yeah.
I knew, you know, I had an idea how bad it was. Let me take that back. I didn't know exactly how bad it was, but I knew it couldn't be any worse. And you know, I'd spoken to the promoters in over in Holland, and you know, the people had paid their money to see me and had driven a long way, and for me not to go, even though I could have, you know, I just said, man, what the hell, man, let me finish out this tour. And even though it was pretty inconvenient, I think, you know, we ended up putting on a good show on the air. I played a GM role, which I was doing on TNT, and it was real good. The crowd was happy, the meet and greet, everybody was real supportive, and they were like, hey, you know, hopefully you come back and you wrestle for us next time. And you know, I absolutely will. So it was cool. And then everybody got to, I didn't get to wrestle, but the people that came out to see me got a chance to meet me and get a picture, and I was, you know, still able to interact. And then it was on to Amsterdam for 2 days because I mean, my ticket wasn't to leave until Wednesday anyhow, and me and Chris Masters were like, man, you know, we're going to go ahead and tough it out and have a story to tell.
And kind of take care of some of your nerves in Amsterdam, I'm sure.
Lots of coffee.
Now, you mentioned something earlier that's indicative of being a longtime pro wrestler when you said, you know how hurt you are. Like, when you get injured, you just know, like, okay, that will go away in a couple days. That's a little bit serious. That one's going to be a problem. We just know our bodies so well from doing this day in, day out, year after year. You can tell right away, you know, the severity of the injury pretty much the moment that it happens.
Yeah, usually. And then it's funny because I told the doctor, it was a kid, Gareth, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm giving you a shout out. He was real cool. He was the one that picked me up and took me to the hospital and pushed me around and stayed with me all day. I told him exactly what was going to happen, because with my right knee, I've had it scoped twice before. I've had MRIs. It's just been, you know, my gimmick knee, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I told him, I said, they're going to do an x-ray. The doctor's going to look at it. She's going to tug on it a little bit, and she's going to say that, you know, the x-ray is going to be inconclusive, and she's going to tell me I need an MRI, and they're going to give me an anti-inflammatory and a painkiller.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I through the procedure, I know, you know. And sure enough, you know, when I spoke to the doctor, and as a matter of fact, here's a scoop. On your show, I went to the doctor today,
mm-hmm.
and doctor was an athlete, and he had had his knee scoped before, so he, in his experience, knew enough to take into account my experience with the knee, and we decided that we're going to hold off on an MRI. At this point, it seems like I have a torn meniscus, but I'm putting weight on it today.
So,
regarding my knee and whether or not I'll be able to go this Sunday, that's a conversation that I'm having, you know, currently with Creative, and we'll see what happens, man. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I can go. I'm icing it and taking care of it, and it's weird because as we were saying about knowing how hurt you are, I've had these injuries in the past where I would, you know, be rolling in jiu-jitsu, feel my knee pop, and have a terrible limp for 2 days, and on day three, it's like nothing happened. It's absolutely
right.
Fine.
Yeah. You know, so why did you decide to? What was the doctor's mindset in holding off on the MRI?
Because he said that if I intend to go ahead and wrestle on it, in the event that I do more damage to it, we may as well wait until after.
Oh, I see. So kind of waiting to see if you actually, because if you can keep putting support on it, you're going to go have the match here regardless. Show must go on, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I just take the hell out of it. He gave me a cortisone shot, and you know, it feels better every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping this will be one of those instances where, hey, just a few days ago I couldn't walk, but you know, as of right now, man, I'm ready to go up there and knock out 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah, because it's a championship match, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it's for the TNA World Heavyweight
right,
title.
Right, yeah, championship match, main event of the pay-per-view. And you mentioned TNA, and you just started, you appeared there probably, I think, a month ago or 6 weeks ago, and you've kind of taken the lead as one of the main characters on the show, one of the focal points of the show, and rightfully so. I mean, it was a big deal to have you come back to wrestle in the States. And what was your mindset to go to debut for TNA in the first place, and how do you like it so far?
Well, let me back up just a little bit. As you know better than just about anyone, I had an absolute love affair with Japanese wrestling.
Right. Yes.
So when my dream, as I've said many times, and people who know me know that my dream was to wrestle in the Tokyo Dome. WWE was always my goal. New Japan was my dream. When I was sitting on the couch, you know, watching tapes, dreams of the IWGP heavyweight title and the Triple Crown. And all the guys that I looked up to had cut their teeth in Japan. And, you know, you and Benoit and Eddie and Dean and Fit and, you know, just a list of all these guys that, you know, had made their rounds. And to me, if you made it in Japan, then okay, you know, you're one of those guys I could check off the list as a legit pro wrestler.
Yeah. And you're right, because that kind of was the way you did it, especially in the late 90s or mid 90s, was, you know, you would go work locally and then you would go to Mexico or Germany and then you would go to Japan. And especially guys that were kind of the middleweight wrestlers, you could really do well there and make a name for yourself. Because I was exactly the same. When I started, I was watching Wild Pegasus and Black Tiger and Ultimo Dragon and Jushin Liger and Flying Scorpio. And that's why I called myself Lionheart, because I wanted to be named an animal just like all my favorite guys that were working in Japan. So, you know, a few years later, you're doing the same thing. How did you get turned on to Japanese wrestling?
Black Magic, man. he was the one that introduced me to Japanese wrestling. I'll never forget. The first Japanese wrestling he showed me actually was a tag match with Manami Toyota, and I forget who her partner was, against...
They're talking about the golden era of Japanese women wrestling, Manami Toyota and Bull Nakano and Akira Taue and those Akira Hokuto, I mean, those girls.
Hokuto, yeah, but it was one of those ridiculously thick, brutally stiff matches with all kinds of unbelievably flexible suplexes. And, yeah. And then when the bell came, there was a 1-2-3. I remember saying that was one of the sickest matches I've ever seen, only to realize that was the first fall.
Oh. You still got two more to go.
Yeah, I think that was the best match I'd ever seen. And then, you know, I got turned on to the epic Triple Crown battles between Kawada and Misawa. You know, the first time I saw Tiger Driver 91, I was like, that's everything that I've been taught not to do.
Which was basically kind of a power bomb where you landed the guy straight on top of his head.
Yeah, just like, just recklessly brutal and horrible. But when I saw that, I said, hey, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, it got to a point in my career with WWE where I said, hey, look, you know, I'd like to go to Japan, and I needed to recharge my battery. It was just at a point for me where, you know, I was going to work,
mm-hmm.
and I became a professional wrestler because I didn't want to go to work. I didn't want to have a job, and I needed to recharge my batteries. And fortunately, WWE was cool about letting me go, and I spent the next 2 years as a regular.
So did you go talk to Vince and tell him, like, listen, man, I got to get out of here for a while and go to Japan, or how did you approach that?
It's funny, I talked to Johnny, and because he and I had often knocked down a few beers, and I would have him regale me with tales of his years in All Japan,
mm-hmm.
and was working with, you know, some of the legends. So we had always bonded over that. And truth be told, when I wanted my release, I remember Carlito telling me he asked for his, and Vince talked him out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Chavo asked his, and Vince talked him out of it. And somebody else told me that they asked for theirs, and Vince talked them out of it. So I said, I'm going to ask Johnny. And if Vince tells Jim that I'll go, but if I can get Jim, if I can go and I get Johnny to intercede, then maybe I won't fall for the
Vince Jedi mind trick?
McMahon mind trick, exactly.
Yeah. Where you would go in convinced, like, I am not going to do this, or this is exactly what I'm going to tell him, and then you would walk out with the exact opposite answer and be happy about it for about 30 seconds until you realized he just swindled me. He totally just made me do exactly what I said I wasn't going to do, and I didn't even realize it.
Exactly, yeah. So that's exactly, and fortunately, I got a call a few days later, and they said, hey, you know, it's cool. Go ahead to Japan, and you know, doors open when you're ready to come back. And I said, thanks a lot. And I spent the next 2 years as a regular for New Japan and had the time of my life, dude. It's like my batteries were recharged. First time working in Cork and Hall. And as you recall, I called you a number of times and to share my experiences with you. And, you know, the first time I was, you know, in a match with Liger, and I got a chance to hear him say, Sussy, action.
That's how he would call the match. Okay, you something, action. Then I come back something, and then more action.
I just burst in hysterics. You know, he doesn't know why, but I know. You know, it was just such a great time. Just going into to Ribera Steakhouse and realizing that, hey, my picture is actually still there. It's not, you know, they don't take it down. You know, I was showing up just to see. I wouldn't call and let them know. I would show up and like, ah, okay, my picture's still there. So, and I'm the first ever IWGP Intercontinental Champion.
That's
so it. Like.
And over there, anytime they give a foreigner, a Gaijin, a championship title, it's a big deal.
Yeah. So for me to be, you know, to go to Japan, work for New Japan, and for them to launch a title on me, to, you know, introduce and put me over in a tournament to be the first guy to hold that title, you know, I understood the gravity of that. And that was like the biggest, you know, besides, you know, headlining the Wrestle Kingdom for the IWGP heavyweight title. You know, that was the next best thing they could have done for me, and they did. It was just awesome. It was everything I dreamed it would be, man.
What were some of the biggest differences that you noticed between Japanese wrestling and WWE wrestling?
Overall, just as far as the show is concerned, from a fan perspective, to sum it up, it's more sport than spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have 8-minute-long promo segments. You know, the soap opera exists more in the physicality than in the verbiage.
Mm-hmm.
And if guys do have a verbal exchange, it's very short. It doesn't take up a lot of time. Basically, the guys, hey, you're a coward, you won't face me for the title, or you're a liar. Yes, I will. Okay, I'll see you next month. Done. Crowd pops.
Which are horrible insults over there. You're a coward. Well, you're a liar. Oh, wow, I can't believe he said that.
Disrespected his honor, you know. And I think that's great. Also, the physicality. I mean, I enjoy, you know, the fact that, you know, over there, you got to bring your A game, especially, you know, and like us, like anywhere else, for a pay-per-view or, you know, for TV, you know, everything comes a little harder and everyone's moving a little quicker. And, you know, for the country towns, everybody, you know, takes it down a few notches. You know, that's the first time I heard somebody say, easy, tonight, okay, easy. Like, yeah, okay, I get it, yeah. So, you know, that's something that I really enjoyed a lot. It's almost like it's 20 years ago still over there. You know, the kayfabe buses and the fact that, you know, there's still a lot of guys in the locker room that don't really speak English. So
right. You
got to be at work. You know, it's cool that you do have guys that can talk and you have guys that can interpret, but when you're out there in the ring, that's it, man. You're on your own. And if this guy can't speak English, you got to be able to work. And, you know, I think that that's something that a lot of guys have or either have forgotten or just don't have the experience to really learn.
Never even knew. Right. Like, I used to look at it like, okay, when you throw somebody off the ropes, or you get thrown off the ropes, you've either got, okay, the guy's going to clothesline you, he's going to backdrop you, he's going to drop kick you, or he's going to drop down. And that's basically it. There's not a lot of options. You know what I mean? Like, if you just come running in and kind of think one of these things is going to happen, that's just actually working. Like you said, there's no calling out these intricate, elaborate spots beforehand. You're just going move to move, and I beat you up for a bit, and you beat me up for a bit, and kind of see what happens after that.
And, you know, that... But it's cool because, you know, I like the fact that, you know, when I'm over there working with a guy who doesn't speak my language, you know, this is the essence of the art that we study for so long. This is the essence of it. You're in Mexico, you're in Japan, you're in Germany. At the bottom line, you know, at the end of the day, it's pro wrestling, and you have to know how to work. And it transcends language. You know, I heard someone, I think it was Norman Smiley, that may have taught me. He said, you know, in Japan, they might not speak English, but they speak wrestling. And, you know, I was able to experience that, you know. So, you know, I had a great time, but after 2 years, you know, I and you'll pop huge for this, I developed an idea for a TV show that I pitched to Lionsgate TV, Eli Frankel. He liked it, and... we entered into an agreement to try and sell it. And I wanted to come back home so that I could focus on this project. And I gave New Japan my notice and told them that, you know, I needed to move on. I had some other things I wanted to do. And, you know, Jado and Gato, two guys that you know really well, were in the office to that.
Now they're the bookers of the company. When I started with them in Japan when they were just young boys, in Mexico, actually, and now they're running the company.
Yeah, now there, yeah, that's why they be careful, right? Isn't that be careful who you
It's what Ozzy said, be careful who you see on the way up because you'll see him on the way down too.
Exactly. And those guys, I'm sure they got shat upon by a number of people who come to them today now looking for work. You know?
Yeah. And they suddenly can't speak English.
Yeah, go figure. Yeah, all of a sudden their English is real bad, right?
Yeah. Whenever Japanese, when you ask them a question that they don't want to answer, suddenly their English kind of fails them a lot of times. And they don't quite understand the question when the answer is something that they think you don't want to hear.
Oh, man. You'll like this. When I was over there, I was actually trying to learn how to speak Japanese. Mm-hmm. I'm always fascinated with the culture. History, my home is decorated with antique katana and just, all kinds of things that I brought back from Japan. So I actually tried to learn to speak the language, and I think the boys kind of picked up on it, and instead of what you would think where they tried to be more secretive, they actually tried to help me learn to speak Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really cool, when they would see me trying to read something, and they'd come over and they'd, help break it down for me. So I learned how to say "watashi ga kokujin dakara," which means "is it because I'm black?" I had a match with Kojima, who is a legend in Japan and one of my all-time favorites. It was working him in the G1 climax was a literal dream come true, and I came out with a black eye.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a legend over there, one of the all-time greats. He comes over, MVP son, you have black eye? I said, yeah, man, yesterday, Kojima-san, he gave me black eye. And Kojima looks at me, I do? I said, yeah, Kojima-san, why? Watashi ga kokujin dakara. The look on his face and the entire locker room got quiet, because how they are with respect and honor. And I just asked him if he punched me in the eye because I'm black. And Kojima, no, MVP son, no, Kojima son, love you. And then I started laughing, and the whole locker room popped. Gato said, why you say this? I said, nah, just jodan, eh? It's a joke, right? Maybe next time this joke don't make.
It's funny too when you go to Japan, and trying to speak Japanese is very difficult because there's different accents and different dialects in different parts of the country. Like Sapporo Japanese is different from Osaka Japanese, different from Tokyo Japanese. So what you can do is learn how to speak broken English, which is what most of the Japanese wrestlers know how to speak. Like you say, hey, man, you want to go get something to eat? Huh? Maybe you, me, go something eat? Oh, yeah. You got to learn that dialect, right?
Yeah, it's like a wrestling patois, I dare say.
Yeah, that's right.
Go eat something, maybe beer. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
You want something drink?
Nah, dude, I had the time of my life. And it's real cool because Gato told me, hey, whenever you're ready, doors open for you to come back. And fortunately, that's been a recurring theme.
Well, that's great. And that's what you want. You want to leave on good terms, on your own terms as well.
Yeah, because when it's all said and done, I don't know exactly what's left. I've only got a few years left in my career. I'm 40. I don't want to do this much more, maybe 2 or 3 more years at the most.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much longer. I still love it, but I just still want to be able to do it at a level where, I'm doing it as good as everyone else. And if I can't, I don't want to stick around too long. Like, sadly, we've seen too many do. I want to walk away. I don't want to limp away. And, we all got to limp away somewhere. But, having said that, I have decided that when it's all said and done, what I would like to do is go over to Japan and let my last tour be in Japan. And if I can work it out where I have my last match in the Tokyo Dome and put some Japanese kid over and call it a career, dude, that would be ideal for me. I could say I've done everything I wanted to do.
Did you ever get to work in the Tokyo Dome yet?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Dude, let me try to get you to come out to be my tag partner.
That's right. I forgot about that. And that was the year, I think, that I came back in 2012 with the Save Us vignettes, I believe it was.
It's funny because, okay, again, you know, Chono, Masahiro Chono, is like one of my favorite dudes of all time. I ripped him off so much. Again, in Japan, he and I met, got to be so cool. I mean, he's just such a great guy. He and his wife, Martina, they always hit me up with Aristris clothing. Mm-hmm. He's mine. But Tiger Hattori told me that, you know, hey, at the Tokyo Dome, we're going to bring in Chono to be your tag partner. Dude, I am over the moon. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is, I'm retired now. My first WrestleMania was against Chris Benoit. My first Wrestle Kingdom, I'm tagging with Chono. That's it. I'm done. It's never good. But then I get the call that, because at the time Chono was, you know, Inoki was doing IGF. And, you know, Inoki had the senpai kawaii relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Inoki told Chono not to do it, so he had to bow out. So then they asked, you know, is there anybody else that you would, you know, that you can get? And that's what I hit you up with. You were already going back to the E. So.
But I couldn't tell you, though. I was like, well, maybe, sure.
But as soon as it hit, I went, okay, that's why. It makes sense now. Okay. Yeah, because you were real noncommittal, but, you know, you were like, dude, I would love to, but I didn't, I swear I would love to, but I can't. And
I didn't want to disrespect you, but I couldn't tell you because, you know how it is, man. You got to keep it secret from everybody.
Like I said, as soon as it hit, I realized, I see what time it is.
We're talking to MVP from TNA Impact Wrestling, and coming up, we're going to get into how he survived prison life for 8 years and what ultimately led him to pro wrestling when he was finally released. But first, my three dogs, Jaws, Bella, and Nibbles, go crazy whenever our monthly BarkBox delivery arrives. They know everything in that box is for them. And let me tell you, the box is packed full every month. It's always different. It's always high quality products. We get toys, healthy organic snacks, hygiene products, and cool gadgets. Yeah. And BarkBox curates this stuff from small independent vendors, so you won't find these goodies in brand name stores. Another reason my family loves BarkBox is because they're dedicated to supporting the health and happiness of all dogs. Last year, BarkBox donated over $150,000 to shelters, rescues, and animal welfare organizations. This year, the goal is to donate $1 million. So BarkBox gives 10% of their proceeds back to the growing network of pup organizations. How sweet is that? I'm telling you, you got to try this too, man. Just go to BarkBox.com/Jericho to save 20% off your first subscription. Did I read that right? 20%? Yes, I did. Wow, that's a lot. That's BarkBox.com/Jericho. Save a whopping 20% off your subscription. Make your dogs and kids happy. It's fun for the whole family. That's BarkBox.com/Jericho. You can also take advantage of this great offer by going to PodcastOne.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting Talk is Jericho.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
This is Talk is Jericho.
We're back on the line here with MVP. Now, I got to ask, what is the road that took you to TNA?
Oh, well, that was, it was one of the cool things. You know, when I came back, you know, I just took a year off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to really focus on this TV thing with Lionsgate. And then at the time, dude, I immersed myself in jiu-jitsu and just took the time off from wrestling just to do all the other things I wanted to do. And, during that time, you know, TNA had reached out to me a few times, and I had spoken to WWE a couple times. But I just came to the conclusion that, you know, when TNA came and told me that, hey, anything else you want to do, we'll support you. Mm-hmm. Any other project, we'll get behind you. And, you know, we'll give you a schedule that will allow you to still do what you love, but live your own life.
Right.
That Lee was the deal breaker for me. I thought, man, okay, you know, because WWE, I've said this once, I'll say it a thousand times, you know, and Vince, I can say Vince saved my life, you know, because he gave me an opportunity to become an international celebrity when society would give me a chance to make, you know, minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my time there was awesome. It was tremendous. I loved it. But you know as well as anyone that when you work for the WWE, it consumes you. It's the center of the universe. It is your life.
Yeah.
And I don't want that anymore. And after spending 2 years in Japan working on that Japanese schedule where you're there for a month and then you're off for a month and you're mm-hmm. there for a few weeks and then you're home for a few weeks, you know, just it really worked out better for me when at the end of the day with the offer that TNA came with and the fact that, you know, because there are other dudes, and I'm going to take this minute to kiss your ass a bit, but you are a huge inspiration for so many of the boys, but for me in particular, because in pro wrestling, you did literally everything there is to do. You were the undisputed champion. You stepped out of pro wrestling, and, you know, I've always said that being a pro wrestler is the closest thing there is to being a rock star. What'd you do? You went out and became a real-life rock star. You're a best-selling author. You know, you're a pop culture icon on VH1. I mean, you have crossed so many different lines and just taken your talent, your ability, and spread it everywhere and said, hey, look, man, yeah, I'm a pro wrestler, one of the best ever, but I have all these other things that I could do. And that's, you know, you've inspired me to kind of want to follow in your footsteps in that regard, because there's so many other things that I can do. I'm not just a pro wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that I have a best-selling book in me. I just got to stop being lazy and get to writing. You know, the other things that I can do that, you know, I want to start doing these things. And this deal I got with Lionsgate for this TV show, hopefully, you know, I was just out in L.A. last week, took some pitch meetings. It went really, really well. So, you know, like, I want to spread my hustle like you have. And,
well, when you work in wrestling in the WWE, I always call it show business boot camp, in that you learn a little bit about everything about show business, live, behind the scenes, improv, scripted, comedy, drama, you know, everything in between. So if you have some creativity inside of you, working in the WWE just broadens those horizons for sure and makes you more than ready for the outside entertainment world, because that's what we've been doing for years and years and years.
And, dude, it's so amazing when you find yourself on going from pro wrestling, as you said, and that's the perfect characterization. Showbiz boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfect. Because, you know, when you find yourself on the set of a Hollywood production, you know, or something done along those lines, it's, and I mean no disrespect, but by comparison, it seems easy. And then you have multiple takes, you know, if you make a mistake, and or
that's right.
You know, we get that from a different light, you know, and they actually take care of you and they care, and here can we look out? There's no ogre breathing down your neck. You know, it's a whole different situation, and it's pretty cool. And then having that opportunity, I go, wow, man, you know, okay, I guess you can get used to anything and complain about anything, but once you've been through pro wrestling, especially at the highest levels, and that prepares you, I think, to be able to handle the rigors
It also, I always hear that anybody that comes out of the pro wrestling world has a great work ethic in you know, other show business opportunities, because that's how we're trained, is you have a great work ethic. You leave your ego at the door, you get in there, you get the job done, and you make it good no matter what. And that's kind of what we're expected to do on a nightly basis. So when you bring that attitude into Hollywood, so to speak, or music or whatever it is, a lot of people are surprised. I can't believe that you want to work so hard. Well, why wouldn't I? That's what I do. But a lot of people don't have that mindset and have that attitude.
Yeah, but like you said, for us, you know, it was just, you know, if you wanted to be successful in our business, there was no other way.
That's right.
You know, but, you weren't going to have any level of success if you didn't have that kind of tenacity. I'm hurt, but I'm still working anyway because this is what we do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you've mentioned the show that you're pitching a few times. I don't know if you want to get into what it's about, but you also mentioned that Vince gave you the opportunity that society would not give you. And that's because you spent a considerable time in jail, in prison. Tell us, for what were you in there for? How long were you in there for? Kind of explain the circumstances behind that.
The Reader's Digest version is me and a couple other people put together this Ocean's 11-esque plot to rob a casino. And we succeeded for the most part. But, you know, I one of the guys involved, his dad found him with a bunch of cash and took out a second mortgage on the house to get an attorney. And he ended up becoming the state's witness and gave everybody up. So,
you pulled off the caper, but afterwards.
After the fact. You know, we had, you know, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, FBI, and it was a big deal. There were a lot of people looking for us, and we pretty much, you know, got away. But, you know, that kind of house of cards, a few things fell. And I fled to the West Coast. I was out in California, and, you know, my father said, hey, look, man, they're looking for you. This is serious. You need to come back before, you know, it gets dangerous for you.
Back to Miami? And,
yeah. Mm. So I ended up coming back home, and long story short, after spending a year in the county jail facing multiple, I had one count of armed robbery, 10 counts of armed kidnapping. And,
wow.
And because in the state of Florida, if you lock someone up against their will to facilitate a robbery, that's kidnapping. And there were 10 people in the casino. So each one of those is a felony punishable by up to life in prison.
Wow.
And, after spending a year in the county jail, I finally accepted a plea for 18 and a half years with 3 years mandatory for the sawed-off shotgun that I used. And at that point, 17 years, I was shipped off to the Florida State Department of Corrections.
And you were 17 years old?
17, yeah.
Wow.
And I spent the next... spent the next 8.5 years as a guest of the Florida Department of Correction. That's why I tell people I graduated from Florida State, but not the university.
Florida State Prison, that is.
I used to say all the time, if seen as a doctor of thugonomics, then I'm professor emeritus.
Well, I mean, let me tell you this. I mean, I've had a few experiences of being locked up overnight in jail. It drove me crazy, man. I mean, just thinking about it now just makes me go nuts. How do you deal with being in prison for 8.5 years? I mean, where is the transition from, like, I got to get out of here to this is my life now, I don't know when I'm getting out?
Oh, man, for different people, it comes at different times, if it comes ever. You know, I spent a year in the county jail and then the next 8.5 in prison, so it was 9.5 total.
Wow.
16 when I went in and 26 when I came home. So when you're 16, 17, 18, I don't think the gravity of things hits you the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 'cause you're young, you're invincible, you know, you're going to live forever. And, you know, after sitting in the county jail for the better part of a year, you know, seeing guys sentenced to 30 years, accepting plea bargains for 30 years, 25 years, you know, I was like, wow, this is serious, man. And when I finally just, you know, today, man, I'm ready to go. Let's get this over with. And I accepted my plea. You know, I'd been in the county jail for a year. And people don't realize there's a huge difference between jail and prison. Jail is where you sit while you await or go through trial. Prison is where you're sent when you're sentenced. And in prison, you know, you get to move around. There's a yard. There's, you know, different, you know, in jail, you're just in a cell. Or maybe you cluster cells around one main day room, but you don't really go anywhere. You're just stuck in that housing unit for months on end. And, you know, they might have a different rec area or something, but, you know, you're just stuck. So after a year of that, you know, going to prison is almost a relief.
So the county jail is worse because you don't really have – like prison's more of like you have your routine and you have your life and you have – I don't know, like all I've seen is in the movies where you go to the mess hall and you go to the exercise yard. So they don't have that in the county jail. That's just in the prison.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know, the county – and, you know, it's funny because what I'm telling you right now is what my TV show essentially would be about. It's the concept of it is where I go around to different jails and prisons. I interview the guards and the inmates, and I essentially teach you, the viewer, how to survive if you are locked up at that facility.
Okay, right. So you're kind of giving like your review of the prisons.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like the Anthony Bourdain of prison.
So what do you do in when you finally get out of county and you go to prison? What's a typical day in prison like?
Oh, well, there's no such thing as a typical day because, and again, this is, you know, what my show is going to get into. Every prison is different. You know, every facility that you're locked up at, you know, is different. They have different routines, different rules, different racial makeups that change the entire climate of the prison. So, you know, yeah, you have a wake up and then breakfast, and then usually you have to report some sort of a work assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, you know, lunch, and then you usually report back to your work assignment, and then usually break for the day, then there's some yard time. And then it's usually to your housing unit, and there's, you know, a day room for TV that you can watch for a couple hours, play cards, something like that, and lights out, and repeat the process.
So what were some of the work routines that you'd have, like the jobs that you would do?
Well, again, you know, it's different, but in the state of Florida, when I was there, and you had, you know, everybody had a work assignment. There was no such thing as not having a job. So, you know, you might have been a house man where it was your assignment, your job to clean the housing unit. Or you could work on inside grounds where you have to cut grass or pick up garbage or sweep sidewalks. They have maintenance units, you know, the paint squad. You know, just any kind of work that needs to be done is done by the inmates. You know, you work in the kitchen, three shifts of people working in the kitchen. You know, guys work in the plumbing squad, in the law library, all over. You know, the hospital orderlies. So everybody has a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hope or you try to maneuver to get a good job. You know, and if you're kind of half-ass smart, maybe you got a little bit of an education, you could try to maneuver to get a job as a clerk.
Mm-hmm.
You can work at the city or, you know, you're not stuck on inside grounds cutting grass or, you know, something.
Wow.
You don't want to be... A lot of guys hate working in the kitchen because it's hot and it's nasty. But some guys prefer to work in the kitchen because in the kitchen, at least you can steal. So you can sell stuff on the compound and, you know, have some cigarette money, coffee money, whatever.
What are you selling it for, though? Do you guys have money in prison?
And again, like I said, they vary. But when I first went in, yeah, they had cash.
Hmm.
And you were allowed to have up to a certain amount of cash on you at one time. And if you had anything more than that, then it's confiscated and, you know, you'd be in violation.
Hmm.
But what they realized at one point is that they, on draw day, let's say Wednesday is payday, let's say they pay out $1,000 to the compound. Well, you can only spend that cash in the commissary. And through the course of a week, you're only allowed to have $5 more. You can draw 25 and you could have 30.
Okay.
So they would put $1,000 out on the compound, but then coming back in through the commissary, only like 600 of that would come back. So where is the rest of that going?
Right.
So, and that, you know, you had a thriving underground commerce, you know, the drugs and just whatever you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of gang element in the prison, or like cliques inside, like you see, like I said, in TV shows and movies?
Had the whole gang thing in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that, you know, real bad in California, Texas, where you have a lot of the Mexican gangs that have established themselves over the generations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole stuff down. In Florida, it was more broken up into race. And in a subcategory, you had the gangs, but, you know, most of the guys that, you know, were doing time in Florida weren't really into the gang thing back then. That was something that was relatively new, mm-hmm. especially among blacks. Florida. Like, they weren't really into the gang thing. It was more about where you were from, what part of the state you were from.
Oh, okay.
Down south, yeah. The Hispanics were more into the gang thing. And in the Florida prison system, the whites kind of just hung together because there were so few of them. You know, they just kind of had to stick tight just to, to take care of it.
Did you ever get in any fights or any altercations during your time inside?
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, the cool thing about it is, if, you know, again, depending on where you're at, if you're smart, you can avoid a lot of conflict in prison. But I was young, you know, 17, 18, 19. So I was always playing basketball. And if you don't want to get into any fights in prison, stay off the basketball court because you're guaranteed to get into at least one fist fight. Yeah, but again, you know, nothing ever too serious. You know, a little fisticuffs, you know, hey, you step around on the handball court and let's get this settled. You know, a couple of times, and then when I was in Glade, CI, there was some little riots. So when in the middle of the night, these young knuckleheads rioting, slinging garbage cans and lockers through a dormitory, and it was pretty chaotic. You know, nothing too bad. Nothing like the major Attica riots.
Nothing Sons of Anarchy type things going on. We're here with MVP talking about his time in the Florida State Prison. Coming up, we'll find out how he found redemption with pro wrestling and which one of his own matches he considers his personal favorites. But right now, we got to talk about the amazing fitness program created by my boy and future Talk is Jericho guest, Diamond Dallas Page. You know, I'm talking about DDP Yoga. I've told you guys a dozen times what DDP Yoga did for me in my career. It got me back in the ring after I injured my back in the ring. I still do DDP Yoga. As a matter of fact, as soon as I'm finished tracking, I'm going to go do DDP Yoga right here in my living room. Believe me, it's great for all people of all ages and all skill levels. And this ain't your mama's yoga neither. This is a cardio workout, people. It's good for your heart, easy on your joints, and will improve your strength and flexibility, guaranteed. I am living proof of that. And because you listen to my show, because you're one of the chosen ones, because you're one of the sexy beasts, you can get a great deal on the DDP Yoga Max Pack. Listen, it's 15 workouts. You get a nutrition guide with that, recipes, and a poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga, which you need to know. You can even download the MP3s so you can work out wherever and whenever you want. It's that convenient. You don't got to go find a gym anymore. You do it in your own house, all right? I'm telling you. DDP Yoga is making it easy as possible for you to get in shape and stay in shape. So join DDP, join Chris Jericho, join Jake the Snake Roberts and Scott Hall and Ryback and Cody Hall and Sheamus and all the other guys in the professional wrestling business who are doing DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to you guys. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho, but this offer ain't going to last forever. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of it now. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And you can also find this great deal by going to podcastone.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. Go check it out. You'll be happy that you did. Hey, it's Chris Jericho. Is your computer running slow? Well, mycleanpc.com can clean it up and speed it up today. Now you might be asking yourself, how did my computer get this way? It's so frustrating, right? I know. Well, opening infected email attachments, downloading music and games can slow your computer down. Over time, running these programs can cause junk files, internet clutter, processor and hard drive errors to build up in your computer. My Clean PC can help. First, go to mycleanpc.com, and in minutes you can get a free computer diagnosis and find out what's slowing down your computer. Then, simply activate My Clean PC software to clean out the junk, internet clutter, and even remove viruses as well. My Clean PC is guaranteed to increase the speed of your computer. With My Clean PC, there are two easy steps to speed up your computer. First, go to mycleanpc.com and get a free computer diagnosis. Then simply activate My Clean PC software to optimize your computer performance. Go to mycleanpc.com today and find out what's slowing down your computer. That's mycleanpc.com. Go there now.
Talk is Jericho.
We're back with one of the cornerstones from TNA Impact Wrestling MVP, So we're talking about you being in Florida State Prison. Now, what were your thoughts about your future at that point? I mean, how did wrestling come into the picture for you?
Dude, it's weird, man, because this is a story I enjoy telling. When I was in prison, I wasn't sure what my future was. I was hoping, hey, one day I'll get out of here, and I'll try to get some sort of an education, try to get a decent job, and, you know, just, you know, live, hopefully. Mm-hmm. By the time I got to work release, which is where you're, you live at a facility, but you wear civilian clothes and they let you go out into society, get a job, and you come back at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you're usually about a year or two away from being released. I was at work release, and that was the first time that I had seen ECW and just being syndicated. And I used to come back. I used to go to AA just to get out of the dorm on Saturday nights. And when we'd come back, they'd be in the middle of count. So they'd hustle us into the TV room, and once count cleared, I'd be in there watching ECW. And there's an unwritten rule in the Florida State prison system, you know, if a program's in progress, you can't change the channel. But, you know, they come in the first week, first 2-3 weeks. Oh, man, it's all wrestling, man. It's all garbage. Oh, man, we don't want to watch that. By the end of the month, it was standing room only.
Right.
It was watching the same guys that were talking about that dumb fake. They were the first ones. Hey, man, hold my chair. So, you know, and I watched them. I was like, man, what happened to wrestling, man? Because my mom used to take me to the Miami Beach Convention Center in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So my uncle used to sell popcorn there. So, you know, I that's not the wrestling I saw. You know, this whole, you know, the whole attitude era, you know, this stuff was brand new. And I remember being blown away by this new spectacle I was seeing. And one of the correctional officers there was an indie wrestler. And he would bring in tapes of indie shows. And, you know, we started talking. And I was like, hey, man, you know, how do you really do that without breaking each other's necks?
Right.
And he was like, hey, listen, man, I'm going to start my own indie promotion. And, you know, I know you're getting out of here soon. If you're interested, I'll teach you. And that was the beginning of the end.
Wow. So when you got out, you had a tentative idea, like, I want to get into wrestling. I'll see what happens after that.
Dude, it's so bizarre because I had no idea. Oh, I left out an important detail. That guy, Primetime Daryl D, was the guy who broke me into the business. He brought in a videotape of an indie show that he was on where he was beefing with a guy by the name of Soul Man Alex G, who was with the Soul Patrol from Global Wrestling.
Uh-huh.
Soul Man Alex G, when I was first locked up in a juvenile detention center, when I was 15 years old, like a decade before that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know, there was some kind of cosmic karma thing happening, but Primetime took me to Duke the Dumpster School. Remember Duke the Dumpster School?
Yeah. Back in the 90s when everybody had to have an occupational gimmick.
Right, exactly. Primetime, he started training. When I got out a few months, he called me up, started training me in his sister's backyard where he had a ring set up. He ended up having to take that down. He said, I'm going to take you to a friend of mine. I felt like I was a Jedi or something. I'm going to take a friend of mine to complete your training. And the guy he took me to was Soul Man Alex G. Hmm. And I was like, wait, man, I didn't give that met when I was in Utah, like 10 years ago. So, here I was, fresh out of prison, right back with this guy, and he taught me my ABCs, 1, 2, 3s. And then that's when Norman would come by, and then me and Norman ended up getting me real tight. Norman helped to polish me, and he turned me on to Japanese wrestling and English wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Norman opened me up to the world of wrestling. He was the one that said, hey, man, you can do, if you learn how to do this, you can do this all
around the world, which is funny because Norman Smiley, we're talking about, we mentioned his name a few times, wrestled as Black Magic, was the first big match I ever had in Mexico was a championship match back in 91 with, or 92, Jericho, Lionheart, Chris Jericho versus Black Magic for the Mexican World Championship. And he led me through a great match, man. And he didn't have to because I was just working in a small independent company, but he came in from the big leagues and and I had a great match with him, and it was completely up to him. And that's what got me the job in the big leagues in Mexico City. So I've always owed Norman Smiley for that, as do you as well, for all the stuff he helped you with early in your career.
Oh, yeah, no, I tell people, there are two guys in the world that I know that if you come to me and tell me something bad about them, I will punch you in the face because you're lying. And that's Norman Smiley and Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, that's right. So how did you end up getting the gig with Vince? You get out of prison, and like you said, I mean, you can't even get a job at 7-Eleven at that point in a lot of cases. How do you end up working for one of the biggest entertainment companies on the planet?
Well, I spent 5 years on the NBC. I spent 4 months over in Puerto Rico for IWA, where Savio, that was his promotion at the time. And I finally went to, what was it? Oh, yeah, I finally got booked as an extra. And, I confronted Johnny Ace one day, and I'm like, yo, man, tell me what I got to do to get hired. Hey, we like you, we just don't have anything for you. Come on, something we don't already have. And I had been working out on South Beach doing nightclub work and security, nightclub security and bodyguard work, that kind of stuff. And it hit me, when I would see all these pro athletes come through the club acting like the world owed them something, and, some of these guys were, fourth round draft picks and hadn't done anything, but they're showing up like, hey, I'm so and so. We don't care, man. Just a dress code, whatever.
Right.
I was like, man, look, this hasn't been done in wrestling yet. This is a relatively new phenomenon. Every week, all you got to do is turn on ESPN, and there's some athlete saying or doing something stupid, getting himself in trouble. This is a gold mine of material. It's never ending.
Mm-hmm.
You just take and apply it to wrestling. So I wrote up the treatment and cut a couple promos and sent it in to Laurinaitis. Actually, the real important part of our story is Ricky Santana, who's a good friend of mine who I met in Puerto Rico, interceded on my behalf because I was really worried they would steal my concept.
Right, so, use it for somebody else.
Right. Ricky called Johnny, and then, on his word, he said, look, man, there you go. So I talked to Johnny, and I sent it to him. And not long after that, I got a call, and actually they ribbed me on that too. Ricky, he gave me this real bad rib where he was, hey, listen, my whole phone call log was missed calls from Ricky Santana, and he was like, where you been? I'm like, dude, what's wrong? He goes, man, New Japan, they were looking for somebody. They were looking for a young muscular black guy to work on top of Chono. I'm like, dude, you're kidding me. He said, yeah, man, but they had to hear something by 3 o'clock. It was 3:30. I'm like, oh, no, Ricky, man, can you call him right now? He goes, nah, bud, they already went with some guy in California. Sorry. He said, you want the, that's the bad news. You want the worst news? I'm like, oh, man, it's worse. He said, yeah. I said, I talked to WWE, and they don't want you out in OVW. And at this point, dude, I'm crushed. I'm thinking, nah, this is the end of my, this is everything.
Yeah.
Japan. WWE, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do with life? And he said, well, don't you want to know why they don't want you in OVW? And I'm like, sure, Rick, why don't they want me in OVW? Because they want you in Deep South. Call John Hayes, he's going to give you a job. I'm like, oh, man, don't play with my emotions like that, dude.
Was your past, your past conviction, did that have any bearing at all? Did you ever hear about it at all?
Yeah, it did. It kept me out of a couple countries. Mm-hmm. And, I never had a direct conversation, but I know at one point that the legal department was working with me because there was some concern that from that time till now that there was going to be some sort of new international regulation going into effect that could exclude me from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
I was working with the legal department on it, and I don't know this for an absolute fact, but, there are some that say that that's what precluded me from going further along than I did. And, if that's the case, then, yeah, that makes sense. I can understand that.
But you never heard that from Vince as far as getting hired. Like, you got hired, got sent to Deep South, and there was never an issue of, like, well, we know that you're a convict, and we're not sure if this is the right fit. You never heard that at all. It was like, this guy's out. He's, he paid his debt to society. Now we're going to give him a job type of thing, give him a chance.
know, that Vince, from what I understand, the conversations, you know, there were questions about, you know, my criminal history.
Right.
How would it affect me being allowed into certain countries? But I guess the general consensus was that, you know, I've met enough of the qualifications that I'd be able to get into enough countries that I was worth the risk for what the table potentially. And Vince made the decision and said, okay, we'll give this kid a shot. And at the end of the day, I think they made the right call. Because the only country that I can remember directly that I could not get into was Thailand. Which for the life of me, I could not understand why I couldn't get into Thailand. Where you can do lascivious things with children, that's okay. But something that I did 20 years ago, you know, as a kid, a bad decision, you know, you're still going to get out of your country, but all right, cool. But besides that, that's the only thing that I can think of. But I know it came up, it was a question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the legal department was able to knock down most of those obstacles. Canada, you know, to this day, I'm rehabilitated in Canada. I just go through the border, show my papers, and I'm good. So, yeah, that wasn't an obstacle.
But like you said, they did make the great call because you had a really good career in the WWE, made a real good impact, and now turning up in TNA and being kind of one of the top guys on the show, working for the World Heavyweight Championship, God willing, on Sunday. What are your goals for TNA? What do you want to do in your time there? Raise the profile, inject some energy? What's kind of your mindset?
You know, you just hit it on the head. I don't think that as a single entity, I have the ability to, you know, raise the profile of TNA, but I can certainly bring some new eyeballs, some new interest. I can certainly raise the energy, and being that I'm new, and anytime you have something new, it creates some interest. It creates new matchups. There's new storylines that I'm involved in. Bobby Lashley, Kenny King. The company is trying to hit a reset button with new faces, new talent. And, you know, I don't see myself as any savior because I'm realistic. I'm not that. But I love pro wrestling. And I'm not a brand whore when it comes to pro wrestling. I've never been, as a kid, if guys had on boots and trunks and were body slamming each other, I wanted to watch. And, you know, I think that in the locker room, I look at the talent that surrounds me. There's some tremendously talented guys on that roster. And, you know, if I could just help, you know, raise the profile, even just a little bit, where everybody else can do what they continue to do, and we can get some momentum going, because I'm for the boys, man. You know, at the end of the day, and I've always said this, the best, the most prosperous times in the history of professional wrestling were during the Monday Night War.
Sure.
And, you know, at this stage of the game, you know, we lost about, what, 8 million of those viewers? You know, those people, they're out there somewhere. I don't know where they went. I'm not saying that, you know, TNA, you know, has to or is expected to rise up and become, you know, this challenger to the beast that is WWE. No,
right.
Not at all. But an alternative, something different. You know, another place for the boys to go and work where, hey, man, you know, I love wrestling. I just don't want to do it 250 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just something different. You know, that's it, man. You know, for people to be able to watch a different product, different guys doing different things, you know, that was the whole allure creatively.
Right.
That was the allure.
Well, I mean, and you got the great opportunity, and like I said, making an impact so far. Final question, dude. If you had to choose one or two of your favorite matches that you've ever been in, which ones come to mind?
I hate these kind of questions, man. You know, and then I've been so fortunate in my career that I've been able to wrestle virtually every guy that I've looked up to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, you know, most of those guys were on that list of guys in Japan, with the exception of Eddie. And I never got a chance to wrestle Eddie. I never got a chance to wrestle Dean. But I got a chance to learn a lot from Dean. But I got a chance to work with you. I got a chance to work with Fred, Regal, you know, Benoit, Undertaker, you know, Shawn Michaels. I've had a chance to wrestle with, you know, the guys that are at the top of everybody's list. And if I had to pick just one single match, I guess just because of it, I'd have to pick my WrestleMania match with Chris Benoit.
Gotcha, man.
And then the reason for that, above all else, is because, you know, Chris was my guy. That was the dude that, you know, he was just the guy that I looked up to in terms of, you know, in-ring technicians, you know, the stuff the guys were getting, J-Cup, you know, this, all this stuff. And I just, he was that dude. So I had wrestled him hundreds of times while, you know, standing up at a nightclub watching my post. You know,
right.
We've wrestled in Cork and Hall. I've wrestled everybody all over the world. But to be standing in the ring across from a guy who, you know, I dreamed about wrestling and be wrestling him on the biggest stage in pro wrestling, you know, to talk about a I made it moment, you know, when you talk about dreams coming true, and, you know, to stand there and to truly be in the moment of realizing the dream. Like, you know, you don't have to pinch yourself. When you wake up tomorrow, you'll still be in Detroit. This is real. This is your moment.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that and then have a match that made a whole bunch of people go, oh, wow, we didn't know you could do that. Because all they had ever seen me do was, you know, run away from Kane or, you know, run away from The Undertaker. You know, you know, I was able to have a match where Chris said, okay, let's show them what you can do.
Right.
And if for no other reason, I'd have to say that because it was the pinnacle of
the circumstance behind it. Well, dude, I mean, you've had a great career, very inspirational, always one of my favorite guys to talk to. We're looking forward to your match on Sunday, whatever you can get out of it, your time in TNA, your prison rating show. I know you've been doing some music. The tunes are really cool. You've done a great job in expanding your brand, my man, and I'm really glad that we're able to do this today.
I'm following behind you, bro. Hey, but you know what? In all this time that we talked, I'm pissed because we didn't talk music.
I know.
That's 2 hours in itself, man.
I know. It always, the conversations go by so fast, but I know you're a big music guy, and your stuff is really good, man. The songs you've been putting out are very cool, and I like the video where you're just hanging out in a hot tub with a bunch of hot chicks. That's the type of, why can't I do a video like that?
You can. You're Chris Jericho.
All right, brother. Well, good luck on Sunday, and hope everything works out with your knee. And it's we'll see you down the road real soon, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. Take care. And again, man, dude, I appreciate you being the inspiration that you have been, man. You keep doing what you're doing. I'll follow right behind you.
No, vice versa, dude. Thanks, bro. I'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, later.
Thanks to MVP for joining us. A great interview. Such a cool guy. Thanks to you for listening. And thanks for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. It's really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. And you'll see all three of my Amazon links. UK, Canada, and everybody's going Amazon. Amazon USA! Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cashola to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra hidden fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you're helping me out in the process. You want to test it out? Go to the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the podcastone.com website. Hit Talk is Jericho. Go to Amazon and pre-order the new Fozzy record. Do you want to start a war? Do it right now. And you want to hear something from it? You need a little taste? You need a little sample to make sure you're going to like it? All right. Let's check out Lights Go Out. Already at number 47 on the charts as I'm saying this to you right now. Let's see how high it can go. How high can you go? 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 I don't know how high you can go, but how high, how loud can you turn it up? Lights Go Out from Do You Want to Start a War? New Fozzy right here on Talk is Jericho. We'll be right back.
think? Don't forget to hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I'm getting ready. I'm getting giddy. Heading over to the UK. We'll see you this Thursday and Sunday at London is Jericho at Leicester Square, and also June 14th in Nottingham at the Donington, Castle Donington. The famous Castle Donington will be there for Download. I'm super excited. I'll talk to you guys later this week from Def Leppard. I got Phil Collin here on the show. That's right. Phil Collin, been in that band for over 30 years. He's the guy that doesn't wear a shirt. He's got a better physique than I do. We'll hear all about that. So much more to talk about. So we'll see you on Friday. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. In the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Talk is Jericho. Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the ninth floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about four deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.